Hey everyone, quick note before we begin. So I messed around with one of the settings in this recording and hit delete all silences, and I didn't specify what a silence is. So everything sounds like it all got mashed together. Sorry about that. Anyway, I'll fix it before next time. Enjoy the show.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please?
Pod of Soul.
Hey there, it's Thomas from Fat Tracks Books and Records, and this is Noise in the Margins. This is episode number 2 of what's really more like the what's going on behind the scenes as I'm setting up the store. So, this week, I worked a bit more on Ignite, the magazine, the newsletter. I'm not calling it a zine, I don't care. I hate that word. So this week, worked on the magazine, worked on Ignite. It was, the article I was working on was the excerpt from Man's Search for Meaning, Viktor Frankl, survivor from a World War II concentration camp, one of the labor camps. And the whole section, which is the first third of the book, is really pretty. I mean, it's one man's recollection of what happened, and it was pretty dark, which I expected. I actually picked a part that kind of emphasized how someone's psyche will shut down their emotions to survive in terrible conditions. And then I went looking for imagery that I could use without spending hundreds of dollars on Getty, and I found a few pictures of his that were in the common copyright structure, so I can use it, attribute it to its original person. But then I started looking at imagery for, well, this is the concentration camp, maybe I should pull something like that, and I came across, say, Holocaust Museum's photos and Truman Museum's photos, and they were terrible. I think the most tame image I found that the most tame image of the images I was looking at that I found, aside from just some of the prisoners right as they were being rescued, was these two ovens that were standing side by side. And you could tell that there used to be people in these ovens, but the way you could tell wasn't because you could see people, but because you could see bones, and they were obviously human bones. I bring this up because throughout modern history, one of the biggest failings, I think, for most people that go through the public education system, is that they don't have a good grasp of how horrific some of these events were. And it's one thing to be told this, but because there's so much, I don't want to say censorship, but so much censorship that people don't grasp the end result, the horror. And so, I started finding these images and I just had to put it up. Instead, I started working on the SBA loan more seriously. And I have gotten considerably further into it. I've got about 5 sections completely done. I think there are 9 or 10. The minimum page count for each section is about 3 pages. So I've got, 15 and 20 pages done. It's mind-numbing. It is absolutely mind-numbing because you do it and then you stop, look at it, you review it, you stop and you look at it, you review it. Do this over and over and over and over and over again. You start arguing with yourself whether or not this sentence sounded better or that sentence sounded better. And a lot of this stuff is in bullet points, but even those are just... It's hard to put something like this out with the idea that the people that are going to be reading this are not going to be nearly as excited as you are about this. They're looking at it like, well, I'm potentially putting up money for this, so why should I believe that this is going to be successful? Yes, I know that you are interested, and I know that you are excited, and I know that you think this is going to be good. Well, why should I think this is good? And I mean, it's a fair point. It is a risk. There are plenty of businesses that people thought were great. People thought the guy that created the Segway, before the Segway became a thing, I think it was a Segway, yeah, before that became an actual product, they were teasing about it and talking about how, it's going to change everything. And then it came out, it was like a motorized scooter. And it was like, really? This is what you were excited about? And there are a lot of things like that where people are like, oh, this is the best thing since sliced bread. And you look at it and go, no, I'm pretty sure there have been other things better than this.
So,
like I said, writing it is mind-numbing and complicated. And no matter which way you mess with it, there's still, even the easy stuff, you know, you just kind of feel that vague drain in the back of your psyche where you're going, oh, I don't want to do this anymore. But it's got to be done. So I've been doing it. One of the things that I've come across, though, is so in the store, we've been talking about having the, basically offering like coffee, right? Like having a little coffee nook. I don't know what to call it. But it's like we were throwing around the idea of having like one of those proudly serves things like Starbucks or Caribou or Pete's or all those other major chains. They have the proudly serving program. And we were thinking about doing that until this week, basically, because I started looking at the numbers, the few that I could get versus the numbers of getting the stuff on my own. And if we get the equipment on our own, we'll be paying maybe a third of the cost, maybe. And then we would have more control over what's being offered. You know, the thing about places like Starbucks is that they don't have any sugar-free offerings except for vanilla. And sugar-free vanilla is nasty. If you've never had it, go spend a couple of dollars and get a small one. Don't get a big one because you won't like it. And if you do like it, then I'm sorry, you're wrong. But no, it's if we do it on our own, then we can use other vendors for syrups like, what is it? Skinny syrup or Simply Skinny or I don't know. But it's some zero sugar syrup, coffee syrup company that makes, well, sugary syrups. Or even Chirani, I think is the name of the big one. And they have sugar-free syrups as well. So yeah, that's what we're thinking. But therein lies another problem, which is finding someone to run it. So if we do that, it's not like, so if you use the Proudly Serving program, they provide the training or they're supposed to provide the training for your initial staff. And that makes things a lot easier, of course. But in this situation, we wouldn't have that. We would be doing it on our own. So we need to hire somebody that actually knows kind of what they're doing, which, you know, and understand that I hate saying it like this, but hiring someone with experience like that requires more money. And that's just the way it is. You can't hire a professional of anything and expect professional quality without paying professional prices. And even for things like, you know, and a lot of people don't get that. A lot of people, I don't want to say a lot of people, enough people don't get that. Enough people don't get that. If you expect to be able to pick up a latte from Starbucks in the middle of the day, that someone's got to be there working and they should be able to at least afford the rent. And that absolutely, you know, you can't look at someone and say, well, this is your part-time job, obviously, and that's why we're doing the training and that's why it's an entry-level position. Instead, you got to look at it and say, well, we need to find somebody that actually knows what they're doing, so they're going to cost us more money. And this is a business, so, you know, no matter how damn the man I feel about anything, it's still a business. It's still got to pay its bills. We still have to pay back the SBA loan. But going off into the weeds while thinking about that. The other bit that I've been working on is the list of distributors, which we have a ton of now. So it seems that Small Press Distribution went out of business last year, and they were like an indie label distributor. And so they went out of business, and everything that I found about them going out of business is like they deserved to go out of business. Like they weren't paying people even minimum wage. They were like terrorizing people to keep them quiet. They were cooking the books. They were doing all kinds of crazy stuff. And this is just what has been reported, you know, and people's, you know, stories and what people have written about them online. But the problem is that so they shut down and they did it like overnight. Like they were like, okay, we're out. And they still had like payments to publishers that they hadn't paid. And they still had people's books that they hadn't sent out and books they collected from other people. And it was just a mess from what I could see. So I tried to follow the breadcrumbs, if you will, to where these independent publishers all went. And I've managed to find like, and I'm not even going to pretend like I can say some of these names. Matter of fact, I'm not even pretending like I can say any of them. I did find things, a couple of publishers like $2 Radio, PM Press, a few other indie labels, if we were talking about music, a few other indie labels, indie distributors, where I think we will be able to, if nothing else, get discounts on bulk orders, even if they don't do wholesale, which would be fine. On the music side, I'm still working on it. I've got a couple of leads, but I don't know how many of these distributors are still open. Amusingly, music is actually the harder harder industry to find the distributors in. And that's, you know, one day I'll sit down and kind of go through what happened in the late 90s. But basically in the late 90s, a bunch of labels all went underneath the umbrella of like three big companies. And there were a ton of labels, small time art house labels all over the place, subsidiaries of other labels. And they all shut down because they all got merged into the big three. And as evidence of that, if you go back in the late 90s and look at some of the groups that were on major record labels, you know, ICP had a major record deal. Let's see, Jimmy's Chicken Shack, the Nixons, I think the Ast, I'm trying to think who else off the top of my head. There are a ton of bands that just disappeared, and people thought that, well, they just disappeared. No, it's not what happened. What happened was their labels disappeared. So because of that, and because the big three are clutching their pearls about, you know, online music and electronic distribution, that sort of thing, they only do reprints and prints of stuff as kind of a novelty thing, which is kind of nuts, because even the RIAA has noted that physical copies of music have been seeing a huge uptick in purchases, because people are realizing that you can have an album that you bought on, you know, Amazon Music, and then tomorrow they get rid of the license and you can't access the music anymore. And, oh well, you know, should have read the fine print. You only had a license, which, you know, technically I think they claim that any CD that you bought was actually just a license as well. But that's getting way into the weeds. So let's see. Been doing nothing but working on that SBA loan. Been trying to track down distributors. Been trying to write this stuff out. Just had daylight savings, so I'm half awake as I'm sitting here talking into the mic. I think that is about it this week. It is a short week, which is really sad because, like I said, this is the second episode. So, you know, that's how it goes. That's everything this week. Next week I should have answers from the distributors, so we'll see what happens there. I'm primarily after entry numbers, right? So it's less about do you have wholesale programs, because most of these places do have wholesale programs, but it's more of a how much money is it going to cost to stock the store up front, and that's a big one, because you don't know how much money you want to ask the bank for if you don't know how much money you're going to be spending on things. And then I'm thinking that in about 2 or 3 weeks we will have a solid answer as to which town we're looking at. I've been looking real hard at the demographics of the two main contenders and the one sub-contender, so Georgetown, Round Rock, and the sub-contender would still be Cedar Park. All these are North Austin suburbs, if you're not from around here. And there's not a clear answer on any of them. Round Rock, our direct competition, would actually be a record store that exists there, Piranha Records. Georgetown, our most direct competition would be Larkin Owl. Of course, Round Rock's got like Barnes & Noble somewhere too, but Barnes & Noble's, I mean, corporate competition's a little bit different. And then Cedar Park, the only independent bookstore I could find in Cedar Park is a kids' bookstore. And, you know, our store is not going to allow children under the age of 16 in without a parent. So that's not competition either. So yeah, I still don't know. I haven't decided. And I don't know when I will decide. Like I said, I've got to look at the demographics one more time. I don't know. But regardless, you all will be the second to know. I'll be the first. And yeah. So with that, that's it for this week. I'm just rambling. So I hope everyone has a great rest of your week and great next week. I hope the country does not burn down to a crisp around our ears. Stay safe, and we'll see you next time.